What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drantz. He covers the team for The Athletic. We're live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drantz, what's going on, man?
Another day in paradise. Beautiful morning.
Sure.
I've already got in a nice seawall walk. Enjoyed the city.
Good for you.
Read some news. Reacted privately to the big Canucks call-up and reassignment, which I don't want to spoil.
Reacted
into it
privately?
On the whiteboard. Yeah.
Like internally to yourself? Or?
Internally. I thought about a lot of things. Yeah. That's what I was doing.
You turned your mind to it.
Yeah. I think I need to. This blue sky Twitter thing, I think, has really thrown me for a loop, man.
We need to settle on one.
Yeah.
Because and it's not even like people are just will post the same thing on each. There's like scoops that are on one, but not the other.
Yeah.
So I have to be monitoring both.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the worst of both worlds right now.
And my enthusiasm for Twitter had been declining anyway.
Yeah.
You know, not just like, not for any political reasons or like terms of service and them licensing in perpetuity everything I tweet for the benefit of their AI bot or whatever, but also because, you know, Twitter's an evil place. And I used to live in the darkness.
It used to be perfect for you.
I used to live in the darkness, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And so now it's like I'm feeling both withdrawn from Twitter and this sort of pull where it's like, oh, I better get my Max Sasson thoughts out
on Blue Sky
or Twitter. And then I'm just like, or I could just keep the thoughts to myself.
You have a radio show. You don't need Twitter anymore.
Oh. No, I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, I do.
I know you do.
No, but it's not like you're like, oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to get these thoughts out? It's like on your radio show that you do every day where you're paid to talk about it.
Or at the website that I write at. Yes, you're right. You know what?
If only I had a platform to share my thoughts on Max Sasson. Well, I've got good news for you, buddy. We've got it right here.
All right. Well, let's get on it.
All right. Lots to get into. Hold on.
Oh,
Brendan Batchelor will join us at 12:30. John Mattis from The Score.
Do you think he has thoughts on Max Sasson?
I actually don't know. We'll see. He might from training camp or something, but I don't know. That's not going to be my first question for Batch. So Batch at 12:30, John Mattis from The Score at 1:30. But before that, let's go to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, November 21st, starting with the headlines. Travel day for the team today. They're off to Ottawa, where they will begin a six-game road trip. And, you know, we talked a fair bit about the stakes of the road trip yesterday on the show, Drantzer, right? Christening it Hold the Fort season. And I don't think anyone's expecting, you know, a 5-1 showing, a 4-2 showing, anything like that on this trip. But if you can hover around NHL 500, come home with 6 points, especially considering the state of the Pacific right now, I think that would go a long way. And the other headline from yesterday that we touched on really, really briefly towards the end of the show, but I think it's worth just talking about a little bit more, was Thatcher Demko talking to the media for the first time since training camp in Penticton. And, you know, we played the clip, the short clip of him saying, you know, just after Penticton, they kind of learned a lot more about the injury and got on a path that has paid dividends and helped get him close to returning. The other interesting soundbite I thought from Thatcher Demko was him talking about how cognizant he is of the re-injury risk and really trying, you know, he used the phrase basically, we're going to have to put my knee through hell before I'm ready to come back, right? To do everything they possibly can to kind of simulate the wear and tear inherent on a goalie in the NHL to make sure he's not just going to come back, play a game or two, and then go right back on the shelf. And I thought that was interesting for a lot of reasons. One, I mean, very telling that he's talking openly about it, right? Like, and you can understand why. That was a tough experience for him to come back before the playoffs, play one game, miss the rest of the playoffs. But it also kind of got me thinking, that's all well and good. And yes, I understand you want to stress test the injury as much as possible before you bring him back. But at a certain point, there's also no simulating what it's actually going to be like, right? Like, you can't actually simulate him playing, you know, 50% of the team's games and traveling and doing all that and practicing with the team for the remainder of the season. So I think it's a very difficult balance they're going to need to strike here where, yes, you want to make absolutely sure that you've done everything you can to put him in a position to stay healthy when he gets back on the ice. But you also have to recognize there's always going to be a certain element of just kind of, you know, closing your eyes and taking the plunge, right? Like, you can't eliminate the re-injury risk entirely, so you're going to have to live with a certain amount of that risk at a certain point.
The fascinating part about Demko, as I listened to his commentary yesterday, that stuck out to me, right, was there's such a level of craftsmanship in the way that Demko talks about the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you can start to hear it in terms of how he's talking about his recovery and his body.
It's
right?
Obviously a lot of thought. He has spent a lot of time thinking and purpose gone into this. Him, his doctors, everything. There has been a very purposeful, thoughtful, considered process he's gone through.
But he's been like that about everything his entire career, right? Like, this is a guy who accelerated through his final year of high school because he wanted to, like, seek the highest level of play as early as possible at college, right? Was deliberate and thoughtful about his decision of when to withdraw. Was deliberate and thoughtful and frankly applied pressure on the Canucks to get him into the NHL once he felt he was ready. You know, after he had a couple injuries, like, he went into the science of preparing his body as best he could. Like, this is a guy who blends his intelligence, right, with his work ethic, with a very clear-eyed view of how to improve and how to approach being the best goaltender he could be, and sort of applies that. And you can just tell that he's applied it to this injury, that he's brought that level of thought and rigor to how he's approaching his rehab. And I thought you could especially tell when he noted, right, that I'm going to get in, it, you know, it's not going to be like right away. It's going to take me some time to get my timing back, even once I'm back in the lineup. And of course, right, of course. And you know what? It also reminded me of a comment Quinn Hughes had after the loss to the Rangers on Tuesday, where he noted, like, you know, we basically all our guys played every game last year.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. There's a level of like clear eyed maturity, I think, with this group as we sort of head out on to follow this team on a fateful road trip and sort of watch how the season goes, that, you know, I do think reflects a sort of burgeoning maturity from this core group, an understanding, you know, not just of who they are, but where they've been. Right. The fact that last year they maybe were a little fortunate in terms of health. The fact that Demko knows that it's not going to be full go the moment he gets in, that he's being deliberate. Like, this is a guy who has started 65 plus, right? Who in the past, like, when he was going toward those games, I remember he set a career high for games played in Dallas, and I asked him about it, and he took, like, serious umbrage with the question. And I think the goaltender you're hearing talk today seems pretty different in terms of how he's thinking about and understanding these topics than he was, you know, even 2-3 years ago.
Yep, and it's interesting because one of the things we've heard pretty consistently from reporters is, you know, this is going to be something he has to play through, right? He's going to have to learn to deal with this, and, you know, who knows? Only Demko knows the extent of that that's true physically, but the mental side of the recovery is a really interesting thing. I think that's what you're getting at, right? The ability to handle it maturely, to know, hey, there might be some bumps in the road, that's okay. You know, he talked yesterday as well about kind of not trying to think ahead to, okay, well, how am I going to feel my first game? What's going to happen after my first game? Just trying to stay in the moment and do everything he can to put himself in a position to succeed when he gets back. So, interesting comments from Thatcher Demko, and of course, very aware of the re-injury risk. And as we said, sounds like he is doing everything possible to try to limit that. It's going to be fascinating. It's really going to be interesting to see how he performs, how the team handles him, all of that when he comes back and as they try to kind of figure out this situation down the road. We'll go to the broadsheet now. A couple of interesting items here from Elliot Friedman's 32 Thoughts column up at sportsnet.ca right now. Well, first of all, just a brief note on JT Miller and Friedman really echoing a lot of what we've heard, but does give a little bit of insight into the timeline as well. Friedman says, don't expect to see him, that's Miller, until the Canucks return from a 6-game road trip ending December 3rd at the earliest. It appears as if this is as much about burnout as anything else for one of the NHL's most fiery players. So again, Friedman echoing the kind of reset talk, and we'd heard that JT Miller wasn't going to feature on this road trip, so that puts early December at kind of the earliest possible return. But again, obviously a very sensitive situation, so I don't think anyone's saying, you know, mark it on your calendars, December 3rd, around there, but just that might be the earliest possible date that they see JT Miller. On a lighter note from Elliot Friedman in 32 Thoughts, he threw this one out, because Elliot knows that we love to hang on his every word here in Vancouver, and he knows what he's doing when he throws this out. He says, weird idea that may only make sense to me. Nikita Zadorov back to Vancouver. No idea if even possible or if anyone would want it, but he was a good fit and the Canucks miss him. So Elliot Friedman starting the Nikita Zadorov back to Vancouver after just departing as a UFA. He's starting it. He's throwing it out there.
It's a polite way to note that Vancouver's defense has not played well enough.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can leave it there.
Well, they're looking for options, I'm sure. I'm sure they're looking around.
I mean, Zadorov indicated that he had some bad blood with how it went down, like 3 weeks ago.
It doesn't seem certain, super plausible.
You know me. I would love to see Zadorov back here, but I just think it's a polite way of noting how much Vancouver's other defenders that aren't Quinn Hughes and Filip Hronek have struggled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess we can throw Erik Brännström in the list of guys who haven't struggled too.
Yeah,
he's played well.
Been a pleasant surprise.
And honestly, that DeHarnay, when it's been DeHarnay Brännström, it's been pretty good. The Canucks have had two pretty solid pairs.
It's been a good third pair.
Yes,
for
100%.
Sure. Nothing more than that, but that's significant.
Yeah. Well, so anyway, a very kind way of pointing out the struggles of the Canucks second pair and in a way that gets people talking, right? So
absolutely.
Kudos.
All right. I'll throw this out there, and this kind of transitions us to the lineup notes section, but Patrick Johnston from Post Media on Blue Sky was reporting that it sounds like Brock Besser will travel on the road trip, but not sure if he plays in Ottawa. And very interesting to see a reporter even kind of contemplating that Ottawa could be an option for Brock Besser, even though it's uncertain, but also good news if he does, in fact, travel on the road trip. So to the lineup notes, as you were referencing earlier, the thing that you had to burning takes that you had to get out to the masses somehow. Jonathan Lekkomäki assigned to Abbotsford by the Canucks, and in his place, Max Sasson recalled. And what's interesting about this is, yeah, obviously Max Sasson, a center from Abbotsford. So with JT Miller out, you bring up an extra center, but it might not be a purely depth matter here for the Canucks, because if Brock Besser's not able to go, and with JT Miller absent, I mean, they only have 12 healthy forwards available, including Sasson. So he could be in line to make his NHL debut in Ottawa on Saturday.
You would think so. And look, Max Sasson's had a pretty interesting run since turning pro. What was it? The
end of the 2022-23 season.
Yeah. So the end of 2023, and you'll remember he scored a key playoff goal in one of his very first American League games. You know, he's been productive. Like, he was really productive last season. Mm-hmm. He hasn't been as productive this year, but he's only a couple points shy of that 0.7 mark that we sort of look at for top nine upside. I would say one thing about Sasson is really strong skater, really high motor.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's a player in terms of the way he thinks the game and the skill level, but he's a little small, right? And not for, like, what, he's 5'11". I'm sure you've got the picture.
On Hockey DB, he's listed at 6'1".
Yeah, Hockey 6'1", though.
Yeah.
So, you know, 5'11". No, but he's not small overall, right? What he is he's a little bit short and a little bit slight for a bottom six center, right? It's like, it's the extra line there.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell, like, in battles occasionally against guys like Danton Heinen during training camp and stuff, I mean, the lack of length that he brings relative to a lot of the guys that he's going to be battling in fourth line minutes, even in the NHL, or in comparison with a guy like Ratu.
Yes.
Right? Who's a specimen, is significant. Now, again, he's got the wheels, the intelligence. I think he's got some skill. I think he's got a high motor. I like him. There's a player there of some variety. But I do worry a little bit about some of the physical limitations and how that might translate. Will be very cool if he gets an NHL debut performance, an NHL debut game, and maybe a chance to run with it. I mean,
yeah.
The fact is that the fourth line, it feels like there's opportunity there.
Absolutely.
It's not
there
as
is.
If It's not as if anyone's really like jumped off the page. You know, in that like Baines Raw 2 mold. I mean, I don't know that either of those guys would be guys you'd look at and say they have cemented themselves. Nope. You know, as much of anything in the Canucks lineup.
A couple of other elements to this. One, I mean, a big vote of confidence for him to get the call-up over Neil Zaman, right? And we know Neil Zaman is limited with his offensive upside, but he's also played a lot of NHL games for this team. And as you were mentioning, has one very clear area where he can help the team, right? Which is on the penalty kill, which is an area where they've struggled a little bit recently. So I think the fact that Sasson gets the call-up ahead of an option like Neil Zaman speaks to a pretty significant level of confidence or at least interest in what the player can do at the NHL level, especially since it looks like he's going to get the chance to go right in the lineup, right? I don't think he's coming up just to sit in the press box. And then the other element is so Lekkerimäki wasn't playing on the fourth line. You would expect Sasson to go in on the fourth line, right? Which means there's going to be an opportunity up the lineup, likely for one of Nils Höglander or Arshdeep Baines, right? And we've talked a lot about Höglander's struggles, and it looked like he had earned the trust of Rick Tocchet. Now he finds himself kind of back in the doghouse playing on the fourth line, you know, even with Miller out and Besser out, not able to jump up the lineup. This could be that little opening that Höglander needs, right? Where with Lekkerimäki going down, there's going to be a spot in the top nine. It might not be a massive opportunity, but it could just be a little bit something for Nils Höglander to hold on to as he tries to kind of reset his season. Now, on the other hand, we've also seen Rick Tocchet be pretty quick to play Arshdeep Baines up the lineup. So it could easily be Arshdeep Baines instead, and Nils Höglander stays on the fourth line.
I was thinking about this the other day, which was, what if you put, now this club has been reluctant and probably should be to move Ratu off the center ice spot, right? But Max Sasson's a natural centerman, so you now have a fourth line center. And you also have a guy in Pugh Suter who, you know, I think is a really solid center, but not exactly your
first choice face-off winner.
Ah, not a face-off ace, is putting it mildly. He's, you know,
yeah, it was understatement for effect.
Oh, okay. Well, the effect was to confuse me. No, he's 37% in the circle this year. Like, he's 37% in the circle. Mm-hmm. He was 49.3% last year, but for the most part, I mean, 47% for his career in the circle and has taken a massive amount of draws. It's not an amount, like, it's not like his face-off skills are poor enough that they hurt you. I mean, they do it 37%.
Yes.
But I always sort of think about it as, like, so long as you're within, you know, throwing distance of 50%, it's like fine.
Yeah.
But once you get 45, 44, 43%, it's, you know, it's like you wouldn't tolerate a winger or a center losing 44% of 50-50 battles. You'd be like, that guy can't keep up. So it vice versa, it's the same sort of logic that applies to the circle. I sort of wondered if you moved Ratu to wing, but let him take draws and played him with Pugh Suter, would that help cobble together something that more closely approximates JT Miller's impact at 5-on-5, while also, I think, putting Ratu in a position that I just think he's better suited for. I mean, you could see it on that deflection, the hands in tight, the size, the skill. Like, I'm not sure his pace plays at center, but I like the size, the hands, the overall package on the wing. And if you can play him with a guy who can, you know, fill out some of the 200 feet worth of center work, the skating stuff like Pugh Suter, but also, you know, address one of the flaws in Suter's game, which is that he's not great in the circle.
Yeah, it's an interesting
one. I kind of like it as an idea. Just a thing I was thinking
just
about.
Just as a way to kind privately of simplify things for Ratu as well, right? And get a little bit more impact out of him. You just, hey, go in on the forecheck, get the puck to Suter, go to the front of the net.
It's not like we have an obvious candidate to move into the top nine otherwise. I mean, I guess it's Höglander, but...
But I mean, it's pretty wild that we're even, that there's hesitation, but I think the hesitation is earned.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? It's like, it should be, you would think, it would just be like, yep, that guy's going to go up into the top nine, but we can't sit here and say that with any degree of confidence. So they're going to have a decision to make at any rate, especially if Brock Besser's not able to go in Ottawa on Saturday. And just one note, you know, they're heading out on a 6-game road trip. Only 12 healthy forwards, right? The move they made today was just sending Lekkerimäki down, bringing Sasson up. And I think part of that is I don't think they have the cap space to call up another extra guy right now, right? So depending on Brock Besser's availability, with all of these injuries piling up, right, and no one's gone on LTIR, there are people on IR, like Derek Forbort's on IR, obviously Dakota Joshua's on IR, so you get the roster spaces, but you don't get cap relief. It could get a little dicey on a six-game road trip if there's anything else that happens to a forward.
Yeah.
So just something to watch.
So you hope that Besser and company are as close as PJ's reporting, because you do need, you know, you do overall just need, like, not just extra bodies.
No one wants to be going on a six-game cross-continent road trip with the exact right number of forwards.
And with back-to-backs and during American Thanksgiving week, right? Yeah. Like, this is travel apocalypse. You know, getting to normal places might be tricky from Abbotsford over the course of this week. So, yeah, no, the obviously the lack of flexibility is tough, but they must think that they've got some guys close to returning.
All right, quick update in the standings, playoff odds. I won't do the Dom's model update because it doesn't really make a lot of sense after the Canucks are idle, but just looking at the out-of-town scoreboard, and especially in the Pacific Division last night, the Golden Knights lose in Toronto. The Kings lose at home to the Buffalo Sabres. Now, the Seattle Kraken beat the Nashville Predators, but the overall effect right now in the Pacific is it's very compressed in the standings, right? Vegas still first place in points percentage, but you've got every other team except for the Sharks now is either at or above fake NHL 500. Even the Ducks have won three in a row and are at fake NHL 500, but just by points percentage, right? Vegas at 632, Calgary second at 605, the Canucks at third, 583, LA 575, Edmonton 550, Seattle 525, Anaheim 500. So a very, very tight spread of teams. And the good news for the Canucks is that
you win one in regulation,
you jump up.
Or lose one in regulation, and it's the difference between being in second and fifth.
Yeah, absolutely.
For four different teams.
So it's very, very tight. And the Canucks haven't lost a lot of ground. Yeah, Seattle.
Five of six.
Mm-hmm.
My Kraken, they're getting it together. Love to see it.
So as much like I do think that drives home the hold the fort point, though, right? Like, holding the fort in this division over the next six games will be enough to keep you very alive in the race.
Yes.
Right? Because nobody's caught fire. Nobody's been able to really create any separation.
Yeah. And look, this is a soft schedule. You know, like, don't lose sight of that. This is Ottawa. This is Boston. This is Pittsburgh. This is who else? Everyone but Minnesota's bad.
Detroit. Yep.
Like, there's absolutely a world where the Canucks are able to actually gain ground on this trip, even shorthanded. We'll get into what that will require in future segments. Gambling odds?
Sure.
Just want to note this because it's fun. Division of Stanley Cup winner.
Okay.
As a way of tracking some of what we're talking about with the relative flatness of the Pacific Division. Is the division flat because it's competitive? Yes. Is the division also flat because it's not that good?
That's part of it, probably.
The betting markets think so. Metropolitan plus 240, Central plus 250, Atlantic plus 280, Pacific plus 320. And that includes the Edmonton Oilers, who are the Stanley Cup favorite outright.
That's wild.
So even with Edmonton in this division, the odds are stacked against the Pacific.
So they don't like... That's a big shot against Vegas, against the Canucks, against LA. All right, well, that's the whiteboard for today. We'll leave it there. We'll take a quick break here. Brendan Batchelor, play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. He'll join us next. We'll get his thoughts on what the team needs to do on this six-game road trip. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.